chair. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Back Porch Education Podcast. For the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about all things educational. It's a wonderful day to learn something. Glad you could join us. Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. And I'm just going to put it right out there, right off the bat. Jason, do you have a poem for us?
I do. It is entitled The Question, and it is written by Robert Frost. A voice said, "Look me in the stars and tell me truly, men of earth, if all the soul and body scars were not too much to pay for birth."
What do you think that poem's about?
Isn't it obvious?
Do you think it being obvious is the answer?
Does it matter what I think?
Does anything matter other than asking the great question?
Isn't it obvious? Well, don't you think we ought to focus on the poem?
Well, is all you're going to do ask me questions?
How'd you know what I was thinking?
Were you thinking about just asking questions?
Well, what else are we doing?
What else would we want to do?
Isn't asking questions valuable?
Can you think of anything more valuable than asking questions?
Can you think of anything else at all?
I think I can think without asking questions, but I'm just not sure if I want to. Do you? Is this podcast still about education?
Do questions have anything to do with education? Does education have anything to do with questions?
It sure seems to, doesn't it?
Are seeming and being the same thing? Why do I keep getting so metaphysical?
Why do you keep asking me these questions? Do you think every question you've asked me has an answer?
Doesn't every question have an answer?
Does every question just have one answer?
Ooh. Are all answers equally good? Are all questions equally good?
Don't you find your most annoying students are the ones who ask a lot of questions?
Don't you find your most annoying teachers were the ones who never asked any questions?
So aren't we implying that the question is pretty important to education?
Isn't it safe to say that?
Are we going to at some point do something other than ask questions?
Don't you hope so?
Do you think we've driven our audience crazy yet?
Do you think they're convinced that we're crazy yet?
If this podcast is about education, and it is, how do questions educate?
Aren't you going to answer that after the break?
Hey, during this brief break, I wanted to encourage you to use the share buttons we have on our website in order to help us get folks tuned into the show. Our goal is to encourage as many educators, homeschoolers, NFL punters, and donut makers as we can with these podcasts. So help us get the word out. Share our Facebook page, send folks a link to one of your favorite episodes, do whatever you can to help us share this craziness with either your best friends or, if it's more appropriate, your worst enemies. We will love you all the more for sharing our love. Thanks. And now, back to the show.
All right, Steve, that was ridiculous. That was a lot of questions in a row.
Was it?
Don't. You're scaring off our last remaining listener.
Well, so a question came to mind a while back as I was contemplating questions. And it was, you know, where did we come up with this notion that the best teachers ask the best questions? And it sent me into sort of a history mode of when did man decide questioning was a good idea? And if you have my point of view, you're going to go back in your Bible and try and find out, well, what's the first question ever asked? And that's at least in my experience, that's a rugged road. It's an interesting road, but you pick up Genesis and you start looking for the first question recorded, and you find this question, "Hath God said?" coming out of the lisping mouth of a snake.
Well, now, wait a minute. Isn't there a question before? Okay, this is a question, but isn't there a question before that?
And what question would that be?
In Genesis 2, when God's creating all the animals, and well, I guess after he's created all the animals, God brings the animals to Adam and says, "What are you going to call this thing?"
So even though it's not a recorded question, it's implied because the job that Adam is given is to...
Right. Yeah, I guess it's not...
Name things.
I don't remember the text exactly, to be honest with you, but I guess it's not a... You went back through like Genesis and looked? Is that what you...
Yeah. I just was looking for the first question, and the first time the words are recorded... Now, I like where you're going there because I think it's fascinating that God, the teacher of unfallen Adam, would be expecting man to categorize and label and name.
Yes, I could talk forever about that. So I got, I pulled it up here, Genesis 2:19. You're right, it's not explicitly asked, but I'll just read it. "Out of the ground, the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every bird of the air, and brought them to Adam to see what he would call them."
Yeah.
So not a question mark.
But you're valid. Right?
But I could, dude. Yeah, that's
to see
that
what
is
he would call them.
Rich.
You know that. Yep. Well, what do you think, Adam? There's a question implied there. So look, the second question then is Satan's questioning what has been said. Because it's not like Adam and Eve got unclear information. It's Satan getting them to think about what God said and wonder, is it authoritative? Which is got a lot of cash value in a podcast on questions. Where do we go to find good answers to them?
Yep.
And some of the things that we ask in the first segment, is there just one answer to any given question? Are all questions equally valid? Are all answers equally valid? So on and so forth. Satan gives us this model of the skeptic, right? The very modern skeptical mind where it questions whether anything's true or not. Sort of the mouth of Pilate. You know, what is truth?
Yep.
But then you go to the next question, and I'm not going to continue this because there's a lot of questions in the Bible. But the second recorded question comes from the lips of God. "Adam, where are you?"
Yeah.
It's a seeking of relationship. God knows where Adam is.
Of course.
Okay. He's not seeking an answer intellectually.
Right.
He's seeking confession.
He's making a point.
Right. He's asking this wayward creature of his to come out in the open and reveal his problem. And moving forward, I just threw out not just scripture, but history. You just find man being this cantankerous questioner. He just is full of it.
Yeah.
In particular, he seems to be asking questions to try and understand, you know, obviously he just wants to know, but in particular wants to know what is true. What can I bank on in life? What can I order my life around? What should I do?
Yeah. How am I going to live?
Right. The moral questions, should I or should I not do this? And then, sort of the questions of beauty, just the sort of wow questions of, well, how does that work?
Yeah.
Or why does it work that way? There had to be some sort of a question running through his mind the first time he saw Eve, you know?
Yeah, sure.
What is this?
Right. Is my shirt tucked in?
Yeah.
Well, no, I guess that wouldn't work, but
yeah. So, I mean, just the nature of this thing that's unlike anything God's already put in front of me. And so much like myself and yet so different and so on. So it's just all these different kinds of questions that man loves to ask. And the Greeks, for me, were the ones that demonstrated to me that yes, the question isn't just a tool in the teacher's teaching box, toolbox. It's the tool. There are others, but it's the one almost constantly in hand. We even name the methodology of asking questions Socratic methodology from Socrates through Plato's dialogues, which my students, when they come to Plato, it's wow, I could understand this. This is just two dudes talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had the same experience with my students. I mean, we did the Euthyphro Dilemma in seventh grade with some kids, and it was, is an action good because God commands it, or does God command it because it's good? And that's pretty heady, but we had a lot of fun with it.
Sure. We keep trying to find a way to engage students, and we have it right there in front of us. Just ask them questions.
Right. And I would say, not to cut you off, but get them asking themselves questions.
Right. Of all the skills that we want to ingrain into if you want them to be a lifelong learner, then coach them on the formation of good questions for themselves.
Right. That's what Socrates does, right? It's not that he just walks around asking people questions, but he gets people to the point where they really turn the question on themselves. Like, they pick it up. They own the question. Oh, man, what am I going to do about this situation?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
And I think that's why reading is so indispensable to – good reading is so indispensable to education, because the only way you really get out of some written text what's there is by mental questioning the author.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you read Adler or somebody on active reading, this is really what they're trying to do, is just get you to, as reader, argue with the author, ask the author questions. Well, you just said this, now prove it.
Right.
And as the mind develops that interlocutor habit, I don't just accept things.
Yeah.
I first hold them out there at bifocal distance and look at it. And ask some questions about it. You know, Socrates seems to use questions in two distinct ways. And that's an important thing for teachers, is to understand that not all questions are accomplishing the same thing. Jesus asked the Pharisees on a regular basis, obviously being God, he already knew the answer, but he asked them questions to show them that they needed to shut up and listen to him, that they didn't know everything. You know, birthing questions. Have you not read? Well, they prided themselves in having read the scriptures and having it memorized frontwards and backwards and whatnot. And so he's asking a question.
Yeah.
Design.
It's almost offensive.
It's to break someone out of their confidence.
Right.
I got to be careful in our modern context. It's not to beat the kid down and ruin his self-esteem or whatnot. But nobody's going to learn something unless they think they need to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
So often a student needs to be questioned or needs to ask themselves even questions that demonstrate, I don't know what all is going on here.
Yeah.
And that opens it up. Then I think the other way Socrates uses questions is to associate something you already know. Often it's, well, how is this thing that I know like this thing I'm trying to figure out?
Okay. Chaining it together.
Chaining it together. Remember, he has that very conflicting question to the Pharisees about why did David call the Messiah his Lord when he's the king of Israel? And they have to kind of scratch their heads and go, these are very difficult things. We'll have to, escape your trap.
Right. So kind of the two ways you're talking kind of about Socrates and Jesus simultaneously there. I want to connect those back to questions in Genesis just to make it all nice and tight. So to show the learner where he is lacking, that is Jesus saying, have you not read? And I would say that is God saying, Adam, where are you?
Yep, absolutely.
And then kind of the chaining together idea would be Jesus asking the question about why did David call the Messiah his Lord? And that would be God saying, what are you going to call this thing? Like, based on what you know about it, what are you going to call this animal?
Right. You've made it this far with questions. The next logical question is...
Right.
And that goes back to the questions we were asking in the first segment. Not all questions are the same. We've established that from Socrates. And not all questions are designed to have a specific answer. Adam, where are you? Has a specific answer. I'm right here.
Yeah.
And he can't be here and there. He is here. And that's either answered correctly or wrongly. And there's not an ambiguity to that. But a lot of the really big questions, why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing?
Sure.
What is my purpose in life? What is the meaning of life? All of that stuff. The philosophical questions, we sometimes seem to get confused and get a little fuzzy about the first kind of question and want to get real black and white with the second kind of question.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't thought about that, but yeah.
In the classroom, one of the most difficult things I face in the classroom is letting the questions take us where they will. My lesson plan, per se, had this idea, but man, if these students aren't heading off over here, because to them, the next one question has bred another question, which bred another question, and each question receiving multiple answers from the students, the most interesting answer, then, well, if that's so, then, and before you know it, you've chained together a hike off, way off the beaten path, that's in many ways far more fascinating than if you were just outlining, well, I think class is going to go like this.
Well, and more memorable for the students, right? More fun, more memorable, longer lasting. I think that we could come up with a whole list of attributes that those kinds of class periods have. But let's hop to break and then we'll come back.
While this show is a back porch discussion, it does cost a little bit of money. So if you're liking what you hear, consider helping us out. You can simply use the donation button on the website to send along a one-time gift, or we have subscriber plans for those who want to commit to regular support. Subscribers can get premium rewards depending on how nice a chair you pull up on the porch. We have everywhere from sitting on the floor to our finest rocking chair available. But whatever you can do, know that it helps us keep the conversation going. And for that, we heartily thank you. All right, Jason, let's see if we can, in this last segment, get practical.
Ooh, I love it.
Let's take that question we started the nonsensical first segment with. What makes a question so powerful?
Sure. So I would say, first off, kind of like I mentioned, it puts the ball in the court of the student. The image that keeps coming to my mind is the student picks it up, right? You throw a basketball at somebody enough times, eventually they're like, hey, quit hitting me with this basketball. And they pick it up, right? Now, they might hurl it back at you as hard as they possibly can. Great. You know, we love that as teachers. That would be the big first right. thing. The teenage or whatever age, the child spirit can right. only resist so many questions before they bite.
Right. If nothing else, like you said, sort of out of self-defense. But often they're going into offense. That, hey, cool. I can ask some of these questions. And I think equally powerful is the fact that a good question, an open-ended question, allows for many possible answers. The dyed-in-the-wool teacher is posing a question, usually of content nature, factual mm-hmm. nature, pauses, thinking that this is making them think. And they're all, you can see the pens are poised above the notebook. And then he gives them the answer he's thinking of, and they right. dutifully write it down. And, well, that was nice. Ugh. So I've got a question, and a teacher-provided answer, and we just move on. And I, as I've worked with high school students who've maybe had that experience prior to me, it's a hard transition for them to move over and recognize that the reason the teacher's being silent and is going to be silent for as long as it takes for them to come up with answers is that I really do honestly want to know what they're thinking. and it seems to surprise them. Like, wait, right. you mean you want to know what I want, what I think? But ultimately, as we were talking about earlier, even if we start out trying to show them maybe they don't know everything they need to know, the human intellectual educational endeavor is just a long chain mm-hmm. of links,
yep.
right? I learned this, and that makes it possible then for me to learn this next thing. And so questions bring those links together and, yep. and inevitably joins what we already know with what we're trying to learn. And so the more questions, the more learning.
Yeah.
If we've done our job today and got the listener thinking about questions and questioning themselves about their use of questions, the inevitable final question is, how do you become that kind of a teacher? I think it's going to require you to develop, use, and assess with questions.
Yeah. So let's take them in order rather than, because I honestly, I'm thinking straight to assessment, but let's, and I, the reason, okay, I'll just tip my hand. The reason I think that is so important is because I think your other two, you said develop, use, and assess with questions. I think whatever your assessment is going to be, that's really going to determine the sort of questions that you use and develop. So that's kind of why I'm wanting to hop straight to assessment. But let's kind of take those in turn. Like, okay, so just super practically, I'm just curious, Steve, do you have like leading questions or like a main idea question in your lesson plans? Do you write lesson plans first?
Yes, I do write lesson plans.
Okay, okay. And you have a lot of questions in those or not really?
I try to walk into class with a great question. I do that in one of two ways. Mm-hmm. For my younger students, it's normally almost always on me to come in with that question.
Okay.
But as the students get older and capable of doing so, I teach mostly English classes where we're reading a book and then discussing it and eventually writing about it. So they're reading the book on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm doing my job rightly in the freshman, sophomore level, a lot of what we're doing is coaching them intellectually on how to ask questions, in particular of a novel,
right.
of a fictional work or a poem.
Yeah.
And the questions are different. And I require of my older students written fantastic questions.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That are provided at the end of their reading, but as we're starting our work with it in class.
Yeah, great. So it's on them to provide the questions. And based on what you see there is where you're going to, the conversation's going to progress from there.
Right. Inevitably, because I'm a teacher and I love control, I've got those things that are just so rich to me about whatever text we're dealing with.
Right.
That I'm going to make sure we talk about them because I'm the teacher. But
of course,
I don't. If we're spending 3 weeks on Frankenstein, I'm not providing 15 questions, you know, one for each of the 15. Mm-hmm. If all's gone well, three or four of them are my questions. The rest are theirs.
Gotcha.
And so they're just more engaged by what they want to know than what I want them to know. So what many teachers say to me is, well, I don't even know, you know, I know how to ask a content question. What character did thus and so, you know, sure.
Yeah, right, right.
Boring. And it's really only going to get one answer, right? The one that's in the text.
Yeah.
God bless the kid that doesn't know the text. He can't answer the question.
Well, and that's what those questions are for, right? To make sure that the student has done his reading. Right. I think actually C.S. Lewis has something about this, but I don't want to chase it down right now. Okay. Did you do your homework? You know, did you read the novel? Yes. Okay, great. Now let's talk about something fun.
Right. So back to Socrates' two forms of questions. I'm first of all asking them some questions to see, do you know your stuff?
Right.
But I'm trying to move it to those open-ended questions that don't necessarily have any one right answer, right, or at least that they're going to disagree about what that answer is, because those are the ones that, you know, the bell's going to interrupt.
Yeah.
We're going to keep going at it as long as we can. And especially if the class is right before lunch, I love it because I follow them down through the hall. They're continuing it. They grab their food and sit down and keep it going, you know, because they're engaged. This is no longer school. This is learning. And I play games with myself. I'm constantly trying to form great questions. This is one of the benefits or sad moments of being a child of an educator. I ask my sons lots of questions. I love to pose them at the dinner table, and then we see, you know, well, that was a stupid question. Nobody said anything. I try to read books that pose great questions, including a lot of Plato. And I play games with myself trying to be mindful of my sentences. I think I shared with you, I've walked into a classroom with the goal, and I don't want to rip the students off and give them a bad experience, but my goal at least is I'm not going to use any declarative sentences this hour. Ooh. It's all going to be questions. And it's fun for me. I know how powerful a question is. And so I'm just trying to constantly practice the question, and you get better at it. Right.
Definitely.
I think even for the homeschooling mom who says, well, you know, I know my kid so intimately, I don't need to ask him. Yeah, but your kid doesn't know themselves well enough.
Exactly. You can see their soul, but in asking that question, you can reveal their own soul to them. You hold the mirror up, right?
Right. Jason, you connected rightly the connection between how I use questions in the classroom and then how I assess them.
Yeah.
And I think this gets violated often. People have a great class and then default back to what's safe and try to paper test a great conversation and it falls flat. Talk to me about your use of questions in the classroom and how you assess them.
Okay. So it depends on what the subject is, of course. When I'm teaching Latin, most of the questions that I ask are, you know, ubi est Roma, like these very simple, because I'm getting grammatical constructions right. But if I'm teaching something else, like I'm thinking of one time in particular where it seemed to be used to great effect was church history class that I taught. And the final was one question. And it was a group of ninth graders. And I said, at the end of the third quarter, I said, okay, look, everybody, it's about, you know, year 1200 and we've got to get through, at least through the Reformation. And so I'm telling you right now, your final exam, the question is going to be Luther or Calvin. That's it. Three words. You're going to come in. There's going to be three words on a sheet of paper, Luther or Calvin. And you have to answer that question. Now, I think it would be pretty cruel to do that if they had no idea that it was coming, especially a bunch of ninth graders.
Sure.
But from that point on, they were looking at the time period that we were moving through up to the Reformation and looking and saying, okay, who's choosing rightly, right? I have to make a choice. Is it Luther or Calvin? I have to deal with this somehow. And so we attacked that question in every possible way, right? Well, what about economics? Or what about, building cathedrals, right? About any way that you could think to ask it, we did. And the essays that I got at the end were really great stuff. And I think that the biggest reason why they were was because I gave the students opportunity and time to let that question ruminate, right? To let it just, let them ponder it until they came up with something good. And they did. So I would say less is more. When it comes to a question,
yep.
You want to have that big, I don't know, I think of them as soul-revealing questions. I want them to look in the mirror and see their own soul based on the answer that they give and be aware of it. And then you just backtrack from there. Okay, if this is what we're going to do, then how many different ways can we attack that?
Yeah, I think reading makes the mind think through something with another mind. And writing makes you get it out on paper,
yep.
Makes you own it. I get lots of moans and groans from my high school students about how much essay writing
yep.
they do. But I just can't find a way to teach them to think clearly more efficiently than through the process
right.
of writing. So just even as we're talking this through here on the back porch, I recognize that there's a whole episode about finding authoritative answers to our questions
right.
that I'm sure is down the road, not too far from now, because I hear that a lot with teachers is almost without exception nowadays, the postmodern student's first reaction is to look inside to do some navel gazing and come up with an answer either that way or from Google.
Right.
Well, there's a lot more here than we've been able to handle.
Definitely.
But I think that's it for today.
Yeah. You started talking about writing right at the end there. Let me close with a quote that I remembered from good old Francis Bacon. He said, "Reading makes a full man, conferences a ready man, and writing an exact man."
Mm. It's a great quote.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, man. Well, I'll talk to you next time.
See you. Well, thanks again for joining us in this great conversation about education. We hope you will not just listen, but participate. Leave us a comment, suggestion, or thought on our website. You just never know when we'll use it on the show. Until next time, pursue joy and learn something.